Thanks for joining me once again on the Grief Observe podcast. My name is Brad Morrell, and I'm your host. If you would like to be on the podcast to tell a little bit about your grief story, please send me an email at griefobservedpodcast@gmail.com or find me on my Facebook page, facebook.com/griefobservedpodcast. My guest today is AP, and she is on here to talk about the loss of one of her best friends ever. And without further delay, I'll bring her on. AP, thanks for joining me. How are you this morning?
Hi, Brad. I'm doing so great, and it's such an honor for me to be here. Thanks again for having me.
Yeah. It's I always hate that I meet people this way, but I've met some really, really great people, and it's always interesting to hear people's stories and just take pieces that we connect with and, you know, really put that into our own lives and just how do we become better people, you know, just from the stories that we hear. And this is, it's always an honor and a pleasure for me to host this and just meet some amazing people. So anyway, thanks for being here. Why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about who you are, and maybe we'll just start there and then just gradually go into your story about grief, okay?
Sure. So as you said, my name is AP Bastian, and I am an artist. I like to call myself a wild woman resurrector, and I'm also a spiritual coach and life coach. And that's the gist of it. You know, I've gone through a lot of change in my life. I'm a nomad. I've lived in a lot of different places. And I'm sort of starting a new chapter in my life now, back in my motherland of Brazil, and really in the flow of life, trying to just inspire as much as I can and give back as much as I can with what I've learned along the last 11 or so years of my life, in particular as it relates to grief.
Yeah, it's crazy that a lot of times we have to go through, I don't know, this passage, you know, that brings us to a place of understanding the world, life, just ourselves. And unfortunately, it seems like grief may have been that passageway for you to a new understanding. Is that correct?
Yes, I call grief a catalyst for transformation, because it really was this big lightning bolt moment that changed the entire direction of my life and changed how I saw the world and myself.
And that's something that I've mentioned on other podcasts before, in the fact that I call it my pillars. You know, there's four things that I've been through that have been extremely difficult in my life. And it's what I stand on as a human being, you know, that it's not things that I would want to repeat, but it's certainly things that I've grown from. And I don't think I would be the guy that I like having not gone through those things. So
yeah.
that's it's I guess we all have different names for the same thing, right?
Exactly. That resonates really deeply. And it's all a matter of what you do with the challenges, right? Because we're all going to have different challenges in life. And how
Right.
do you move through that? That's really the hero's journey of moving through those challenges, what you do with the pain, and how can you alchemize it into gold? How can you turn that into nectar, into wisdom?
Yeah, and so many people will sit in that grief for a very long time. And, you know, for me to tell someone that, you know, you need to be through this or a different place within a year, I don't think that's a fair statement at all. You know, some people get to a different place in grief very quickly. Some people, it takes many years. Some people never move at all. You know, there are certain people who literally die in grief. That's an amazing thing. And, you know, people like yourself and me, and many others out there are trying to get people to a different level to see that there is life beyond grief. And so let's talk a little bit about your loss, and then we'll circle back to grief itself and things that you've learned. But why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about the person that you lost?
Yeah, so I lost my dearest friend, my one most special person in the world at the time for me. His name was Paul Scheffler. And I was at a time in my life in a new place. We had moved to Colorado together. I had just left a career and was feeling really lost. Didn't have many friends in town. So, just painting this picture of like, imagine the most special, dear friend you have in your life. That was Paul for me. He was the person that brought me, adventures on the weekends and kept reminding me really of the hope and that things would all work out. And really, this unconditional, loving friend and support system in my life. And he passed suddenly from a brain aneurysm. And he was 29 years old. So it was a
Wow.
very shocking loss as well. No one saw it coming. No one expected it. My last text to him, because he wasn't responding to my text, was, "Are you alive?"
Wow. Wow. Did you know? Like, did you have a sense that it was something was deeply wrong, or was this just a question that, you'd kind of send a friend that you hadn't heard from in a while?
No, I knew that something was off intuitively because he always texted me back. It never took a matter of day or two for him to get back to me. And that was the case that weekend. It had been like 2 or 3 days I hadn't heard from him. And then I got the call that he had passed, and I was in total shock.
Wow, I'm so sorry. So, had you all been friends for a long time, or was it one of those connections that you just, I don't know, instantly flourishes? Like,
We had met in law school, and it was my second year of law school, and his as well. And I was running late. It was kind of serendipitous. I was running late to class, and there was one seat left, and it was right next to Paul. And that's how we met. And then we became friends. And by that time that he passed, we had known each other for near like 3 years. So it hadn't been that long, but it was that kind of connection that it was immediate because we both had this kind of wildness about us and this thirst to really live life. He had traveled a lot. He had this adventurous spirit that really resonated with me. And it wasn't like a lot of people in law school, they tend to be more type A, like safe, structured. And he was very structured as well, but there was this fire about him that I really, really loved. And so it was like a immediate connection and blossoming friendship from then on.
And that kind of goes into the fact that, it doesn't matter how long a person knows someone. If there is a connection, whether it's, 4 days, 4 years, 40 years, it doesn't matter. That that person meant a lot to you. And it's
It's so true.
so tell me this, like, what's one of the biggest takeaways from your friendship with Paul?
Like, really live your life. Don't wait to do the thing that you want to do. Don't waste your time doing things that don't bring you joy, that don't really fill you up. Go and take that trip. Go and go on that retreat. Go and book that coach. Don't hide. Don't hide from life. Don't hide from the world. Let yourself be seen. Let yourself be loved.
So, even though that was your takeaway from him, was there a time period after he passed that you were kind of the antithesis of that saying that you weren't living life?
100%. Yeah, because grief, it shatters you open. It brings you to such a tender moment where it's really back to I'm just trying to get through the next hour and then through the next day. And getting out of bed is difficult. You feel it in your body. You feel the heaviness, like you physically cannot move. At least I did, especially at the beginning. And there was a point too where I just felt really, really numb. And I didn't even know what to feel.
Yeah, and there's
And
so
so
many
I.
people that I think describe what we or prescribe what we should feel. Or, that's why I don't know. There's so many different roads, I guess, that people take. But what's good for me may not be good for you at all. And what I experience may not be something that you experience at all. And especially when we're talking about emotions, you know?
Yes, it's such a personal experience, and everyone navigates it differently. And I think that's what else is tricky about grief, and in particular, trying to connect with other people about it, is they immediately want to impose their own version of grief on you and then
Yes.
say, you should be feeling this, or then you're going to feel this. But grief is this wildly personal thing that cannot be caged and put into a formula and broken down into parts and given a timeline. It doesn't care about a timeline. It doesn't care about what you should feel. It's here to show you what you need to see and feel and process in your own way, in your own time.
Yeah. And being well traveled throughout the world, you've probably seen people grieve in a lot of different ways. And you know, there's I think so much here in North America, especially there's we have our specific ways of grieving, and you know, even different areas of the US here. You know, I live in the South, and I'm certain that we grieve differently than those in the North or those in the West. And but when you start opening it up to the world, it's like, wow, we really do. We not only grieve differently, but we mourn differently. And you know, there are lots of interesting videos when you start looking at how people mourn. I know this is going to sound weird, but I was in a conversation yesterday with someone about people fighting at funerals, and I just Googled, you know, funeral fights, and hundreds of things popped up. I didn't get to watch any of these things, but I was just talking about how one of my previous guests talked about how family members seem to hold it together until that coffin starts going into the ground, and then it's all bets are off. People lose it. And that's where the conversation originated from. But when you look at the different mourning styles, and my last guest, we talked about the Victorian era and how their mourning was just so different. But anyway, being well traveled, were you able to experience grief in any other of the countries that you visited or saw other people grieving?
Yeah, I think this experience that comes to mind was I lived almost 2 years in Mexico, and they have, the Day of the Dead, and there's just this beautiful connection, not so much to grief, but the afterlife. And I think that connects with grief, and that if you see that someone has passed but is ever present in your life, if you have this kind of spiritual, connection with the people that have passed, that this is a connection that never really dies, that it is beyond time and space, then you grieve differently. And not only that, but you are aware that you are always with that person and you honor them. They're forever in your mind and in your heart. So for the Day of the Dead, they will set out altars on different days. So it happens at the beginning of November. And different days is for different ancestors or people that have passed. So there's a day for, children that have passed that have been in your family. There's a day for your ancestors. And there's also a day for loved ones that have passed. And you're supposed to set out ofrendas, which are offerings to them. And these offerings are simply the things that they loved. And so while living there, I got to build my own altar for Dia de los Muertos. And I got a picture of Paul and put it on the altar and set out, some offerings of things he liked, which were coffee and, forget what else I put out. I think it was coffee and some treats I knew that he liked, and connected with him in that way, and keeping his memory and my love for him forever alive, and sort of also transforming it into this celebration, right? That like I met this beautiful, amazing person, we had this love, and here he is, still in my heart, still present in my life.
I like that you say that, you know, that he is still with you. And I think so many people, It's like we forget who that person was a lot, you know, that and I think we have to be intentional to know that this person passed through our life for a certain time period, and just because they're no longer here doesn't mean that the relationship loses meaning. You know, it's and one of the worst truths that I can share with someone is that every relationship on earth will pass, right? Like it's whether it is a spouse dying, whether it is a friend that passes, whether it's a client counselor, you know, somebody's met their goals and they move on, or whether it's just a friend passing through time in a moment. And, you know, even if the friend is still living out there was a purpose for them being in your life for that moment. And I think too many times, especially if a relationship ends in a negative way, you know, like a breakup or something like that, we tend to just discard the whole thing, like it was all worthless. No, it wasn't. Otherwise, you would not have spent time with that person. Like they're, what can you take? You know, I'd mentioned my four pillars. One of those was an ex-girlfriend who is still living and she's out there. I can't say it was all bad. You know, there were things that I got from her, and even the experience, the horrible experience of, you know, losing this relationship still formed something special in me. So anyway, I think we need to take those moments, especially in physical loss, where we do keep honoring that person. That we never lose sight of what that relationship meant to us. And it sounds like you've certainly done that with Paul.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I think what you said about facing this reality that we're all, nothing is fixed, nothing is forever in this unchanging state, right? So it's a practice of detaching. And I think that's also a big lesson from grief is life has its own death life cycle. You don't, nothing is ever just blooming. Things also die. That's just as important and valuable part of life as is the blossoming. And there's lessons in medicine in both. And instead of it being bad or good, is what do you do with it?
Yeah, I definitely look at you know, the four seasons, and I don't know that you experience four seasons like we do here in Tennessee, but you know, there are truly four seasons here, and I don't know, it seems like with time they, you know, a couple of the seasons have become shorter. But we still experience, you know, spring, summer, fall, winter, and there is this growth period, and then there's this deterioration period, and then there's this period that just seems cold and dead, and you just like, please, something. I need to see one little spring of green popping up somewhere. And I think when we go through grief, it's very much like that, that we're looking, it's like maybe we do feel hopeless in the dead of winter, you know, that there's nothing good. There, it's cold, I'm tired, I'm depressed, maybe feeling hopeless. And then we see just, you know, maybe a bird fly by or something that says, oh, wow, maybe spring is almost here. Maybe there is new growth on the way. And I don't know, when you find that, I think it does bring on this new season. And, you know, and then it's like you get to the summertime and it's like everybody thinks of summer as being fun. And then the fall happens again. Fall's my favorite time of the year. There is beauty even in things that are dying or leaving us. You know, you look at trees, I love the colors of fall, and it's like it's actually dying, but there's beauty there, you know, and we don't think about that with our personal lives, or especially in death, or you know, a death, especially for those who are in this period of anticipatory grief with a long-term illness. They see this person that once was, that they were having fun with, now deteriorating. Anyway, I'm going off on some tangent, and this is your podcast today, but I don't know. I was feeling moved about the four seasons there, and at least wanted to express that there are seasons, even in grief, that we need to pay attention to.
Absolutely. And I love, this way of connecting to the seasons and connecting to nature for wisdom, because there is so much nature there. And, for me, especially what it brings up is acceptance. When you're in winter, you cannot control winter. You cannot control how long it lasts. And you trying to control that is actually what causes the suffering.
Yes.
If you just accept, like, this is where I'm at, and allow yourself to feel the anguish, the pain, the heartbreak, the hopelessness you feel, then you can start letting it out and clearing space for this beautiful blossoming that's going to occur because you allowed yourself to process and really be in winter. And it will change, right? That's the one thing we know, that it will change. Spring will come. And allowing yourself to feel the depths of despair and grief is actually what's going to lead you to feel the highest levels of joy and pleasure you've ever felt in your life. Because when your heart fully breaks open, it breaks open to let in more life and joy and pleasure as well.
Yeah, I think one odd opposite to think about with acceptance is actually avoidance. You know, the fact that, okay, I'm not going to deal with this right now. And I think when we put ourselves in that spot, really what we're doing is delaying that grief. Grief will come back. It will come back and want to be paid in interest. So I think, you know, acceptance doesn't mean that we're okay with this person being gone. It means that I'm accepting that this is really happening to me, right? This has happened, and I have to figure out this new path. So, you know, in essence, we are grieving not only that loss of an individual, but we're also grieving the loss of our vision of what we should have been doing with that individual, right? Is there anything that you thought, at least in the moment, that I'm being robbed of with Paul passing?
I mean, I totally went into victim mentality for a while. Why is this happening to me? And how could I lose the one? I'm already going through such a hard period. How could I lose the one person that was helping me through this? I felt robbed of all the joy and happiness that I had with him. And then I felt like I was just thrown into a dark pit of despair for a while.
Yeah. Did you see any noticeable changes in behaviors? Like, did you lose appetite? Did you, I think you had mentioned maybe staying in bed more or sleeping more during that time period. Very, very natural to do that. Like, and maybe that is a portion of avoidance. Sometimes it's, I just can't muster up that energy. What other changes did you notice physically or even mentally during that time period for you?
I mean, I really let myself go all the way there. I think it's just like my artist side is like, all right, this is what's happening. Let's go with it. I didn't exercise for about 3 months, which for those that know me is a very rare occurrence. So I gained weight. I definitely was depressed, and that like I didn't have many interests or things that I really wanted to do, feeling more lethargic, heavier, just more dense in my energy. And there was also a phase where I got really self-destructive in terms of just drinking, turning to substances to kind of help, numb the pain, I suppose. And it was a while there. It was a few months of that, at least like 3 to 6 months of like really being in the throes of, the darkness of grief.
Yeah, I think people do often turn to lots of things, not even just substances. And I've mentioned it probably 100 times at this point on the podcast, but I call it cheap anesthetics, like something to numb us from dealing with what is at hand. And whether it's binge watching TV or substances or leaning into other people or unhealthy relationships or maybe bringing on new relationships that we don't have the energy for. That's very, very common.
Yeah, I think for me, how I understood it down the line was that I was feeling so dead. Like everything, like so much had been taken from me that I turned to like risky behaviors like casual sex and over drinking and, like going to parties and just doing stuff that I knew wasn't the safest or the best for me. But doing those things brought like a spark of aliveness. It reminded me, it made me feel something at a time when I was so numb. And
Yes,
that's why I turned to it.
and that's exactly what I was going to state is I think people start doing something so they can feel something, even if it's not healthy. You know, if it's not there's not great long-term things that we're going to get from these things. But again, when you're feeling dead, and you know, it's weird to even think about that something that has a heartbeat can be so dead inside sometimes, right? And we see, of course, you can turn on the TV and see that any day of the week now, that these people with heartbeats aren't really living. They're existing. They're trying to find their way through whatever. I'm glad that you did find your way through, I don't know, some very rocky paths, I guess. Or what could have been. You could have taken a really, really hard right turn into the wrong place, right? But somehow you worked your way through it. What did it feel like whenever you started taking those first healthy steps? How did that look different than, like I stated, these cheap anesthetics?
Oh man, I think for me that involved being really honest with myself and facing some hard truths and processing my emotions, starting to learn even. I had been so disconnected from my body for so long, and just sitting with myself and writing was a huge tool for that. What even helped me see like, oh, I'm engaging in these destructive behaviors because I feel so dead, and this is the one way that's making me come alive. And it started to feel good in that, there's a sense of a little bit of more taking action and control and responsibility, but also difficult because that's not an easy journey. It's going to feel confronting at times to, see these hard truths, like I'm being self-destructive. That's not necessarily an easy thing to address and to connect it to. It's because I'm deeply sad and shattered and heartbroken. And what does it look like if instead of turning to that, I just tend to the pain? And that meant just sitting with it and processing. And that was also really, really difficult. It's even harder, I would say, than engaging in the destructive behaviors. Because it's actually tending to the wound. And it's heartbreaking to do that. It stings. When we have a wound, it's throbbing. It's calling our attention for a reason. And we can keep putting a band-aid on it, but the wound stays there. And once you start to address it, it's gonna hurt because you're tinkering with it. You're trying to heal it. But it's the attention that heals it.
Yeah, I believe, you know, a lot of times when I'm talking with my clients, I'll speak about, you know, you can let that wound, you know, fester and be infected, or we can do some hard surgery, and this surgery may hurt worse than it hurts right now, but it's going to start healing at that point once you do the proper work on this. Did you have to give yourself a lot of grace and patience during this time of renewing and learning more about yourself?
Yes, a lot of gentleness. I had to teach myself what that word even meant. What does it mean to treat myself with gentleness? And again, like listening to my body, because I think sometimes we stay so much in the mind that we miss all the cues that our body is giving us. For example, if sometimes like a wave of grief would hit, like on the anniversary of Paul's death, for example. And that was like a very visceral physical experience for me that would take me back to the day when I found out that he died, and this heaviness in my body, and this feeling that like I can't move. And I learned over time that when my body felt like that, it was let's surrender. What I need now is to just, if I need to just lay on the ground and become a puddle and just cry all day, that's what I'm going to do. That's what I'm going to give myself. And that's a really difficult thing to do, especially in a society that tells us, get over it. And oh, it's been 2 years or it's been this long, because grief doesn't follow this any logical process, So it was a lot of reteaching myself how to be tender and how to be compassionate, and understanding too that grief is a journey and it's never going to come a day when it's over. Even now, it's been nearly 9 years since Paul died. And on the anniversary of his passing, September 13th, it always hits me. Hits me differently. Not every year is the same. But I just know that that's a time when I need to be kinder and gentler with how I move, what I allow myself to do and take on during that time.
Yeah, I think our bodies certainly know and keep very good record, even if we're not thinking about it. I had this time period in my life where it was my birthday, my anniversary at the time, my ex's birthday, and then we divorced, all within that same week. So it was every year I'd come around to this anniversary time, and I would just get in this funk. And until one of my friends basically said, "Hey, don't you have a lot going on mentally this week, every year?" And I'm like, "Yeah, there are a lot of anniversaries right in this time period." And for many years thereafter, I started almost watching the calendar, like, I know it's coming. I'm going to be prepared. Now, there were certainly times where it still hits you, no matter how prepared you are, and you've just got to let it be. But for the most part, I started recognizing that. And it's like my body had already been recognizing it for years. Now, when I come to that point of October, I don't really think about it anymore. It's like, okay, yeah, here's my birthday. And a couple of days later, I'm thinking, I didn't even think about it. Heck, this would have been my anniversary today. And it's like, who cares? Like, she's having a great life, I'm having a great life, and we're moving on. But I guess so many times we don't pay attention to those cues that our body is stating, hey, maybe you need more rest. Maybe you do need more fun, something to break through. So I think being in tune with ourselves and knowing what we need, is so, so important. We just don't listen.
Yeah, and many of us don't make time on a daily basis to just check in,
Absolutely.
Daily little morning practice of putting your hand on your heart. What do I feel today? How does my body feel? What is the kindest thing that I could do for myself today? And I feel like navigating grief, that is life-changing right there. If you could just have this one moment of like, how do I feel today? And what's the kindest thing I can do for myself today?
Excellent way of putting it. And we're our worst critics. We start heaping on the guilt and the shame that I should be further than I am right now, or I shouldn't feel these things, or I would be better off doing this or that. And there's just so much guilt involved. And I think it is because so much has been prescribed by our society that states this is what grief looks like, this is what you should do. But I think absolutely checking in like that and being mindful. I used to have this app on my watch that would just say, breathe or look or, feel. And it's like, do I really need those reminders? Yeah, I do, because it's not first nature to say, yeah, let me put my hand on my heart and just see what I'm feeling today. And let me be patient and kind to myself. Most of us, we are our worst critics.
Absolutely. And we weren't taught how to love ourselves. And I
No.
think that's a big part of it too. Like, that's not a class in school. For many of us, we have come from tumultuous homes or had, tenuous relationships with our caregivers. And so it's this whole process too of like reparenting and learning how do I love myself through this?
Yeah, that's great. I do want to throw something out, and I hope it's okay to talk about this, but you've got a book called A Dirty Word Called Grief. You want to speak about
Yes, I
that?
do. Sure. So, my first creative baby, as I like to call it, A Dirty Word Called Grief, is my book about my journey with grief in general. And it's a mix of poetry and prose. And it goes through the day that I found out that Paul died, basically, till the end, which is a chapter called One Love. And it's really painting this picture of my journey with grief. And how it started deep in the darkness and it ends in this beautiful, moment of light, and how grief can bring us all closer together if we allow it to do so.
Yeah, it is one of the experiences. Really the only experience that we'll all see at some point is our own passing. Some of us may never see the passing of a very close loved one, but I would say it's rare. But yeah, it is the universal thing that we all go through. And it's amazing that I don't think there's enough air given to people going through grief, even though most of us have experienced something, a grief of some sort, and most of us have experienced a major loss of some sort, whether it's a parent, a grandparent, a child. Why are we not kinder to others during those time periods? I've spoken many times that during that first week when somebody has passed away, we're so kind. We bring food, we show up to a funeral, we make a phone call or a text and say, I love you and I want the best for you. And then week two, gone. Where do they go? Why does the care and love cease after a week or a month? It's crazy.
Yeah, I think a lot of people just, if you haven't been through grief, you don't really understand grief. And there's this notion of, especially like after week two, like you go back to work. If you live in the US, you don't, like I didn't get time off work. I think I only had a week, if even that. And how do you do that? How do you go back to work when your entire world just collapsed, And it feels like, and this is why my book is called A Dirty Word Called Grief, because from my own experience, it felt like when I really wanted to talk openly about what had just happened, about my loss, I could feel people emotionally take two steps back. Like it was too much. There was too much maybe darkness or emotion. And I just felt like, but this is a part of me now. This is a part of my life, of my experience. And if I can't talk about grief, then what can I talk about? We're all going to experience this at one point or another. And when I would turn to books or podcasts about grief at that time, it felt like a lot of it was immediately turning grief into something positive, which, as we recognize, yes, it is transformative. And yes, it will change your life in really beautiful ways, but it's also a journey. And the start of this journey is really a lot of darkness and despair. And sadness, like deep, deep sadness. And that has to be okay for us to talk about, for us to be able to hold space for each other. That has to be something that we can open our hearts to just allow someone to express in their own way, in their own words, without judgment, without immediately trying to, say, oh, I broke up with someone once, so I know what grief is like. Just holding space. And that's really what I try to do in my book, is it's a very vulnerable portrayal of what my own grieving process was like and what I imagine a lot of people's grieving process is, which is the days when you can't get out of bed, which is the days when you are crying in public because you're just so sad, which is, the struggle, which everything, the destructive behavior, it's all a part of the journey. And there's some time before you get to the part of the story where you are living with more joy and more pleasure in your life.
Yeah.
But all of it belongs, it all has a place.
Are there any other coping strategies that you thought were helpful for you that maybe somebody's just starting this grief journey? Anything that you think would be helpful for them?
I think the most transformative thing for me was just really giving myself space to feel and be with the emotions. At the beginning, I had this fear that I would be stuck in a certain emotion and not be able to move through. And then I realized with practice that it really was, we only get stuck when we don't give ourselves space to just process whatever comes up. So that really helped me a lot. And just, you touched on this, but just patience and understanding that it's a process and really trying to be gentle with yourself through it, not putting expectations or a timeline and being curious as much as possible, like what is my body telling me? What's coming up? Why am I having this memory surface today? And what can I learn from this?
I know you're out there on some social medias and things. Are you transparent about your grief on those, or is that something separate from what you do out there?
No, it's definitely just a big part of what I share. I've talked very openly about grief, about everything, really. So if anybody wants to find me on Instagram, it's at AP Bastion, and you can find my thoughts on grief on there as well.
Yeah, and I'll definitely put your link tree in the show description too, so people can find you. Trying to think of some other questions. What do you think we're missing here? Any other avenues you want to go down about grief?
I guess I'm coming back to this practice question that you asked me. And it feels silly not to mention that writing was a big tool for me that actually helped me connect with what I was feeling. So if you struggle, for example, with taking some time to just sit with your feelings, because I know that can be very confronting for a lot of people, especially without a guide, journal. Journal on what you're feeling, whatever's coming up for you. Start a little journaling practice every day. And that's a really simple way to just allow yourself to process your feelings.
Yeah, I think so many people think about journaling as this task or something that takes a lot of time. And sometimes, I'll tell my clients just write down the emotion, or on a scale of 1 to 10, how great was today? Just something to state, I was present today, that I made today count. Even if it's one of your low days. But I think journaling is one of the biggest gifts that you can give yourself, because when you can go back and say, you know what, a month ago or 3 years ago, this was what I was feeling. Holy cow, look at this. I've grown so much, and when people come in every other week, once a month, whatever, I can see this huge growth in them. And they're like, really? You think I'm getting better? And I'm like, yeah, and I'll bring out a point and it's like, do you not see this? And I always state, though, you live with yourself 24 hours a day. Your measure of growth is going to be way different than someone who does not see you that often. So I think by having that journal, you can go back and you can see the growth through your own words. And I'm more about handwritten journals. I understand we live in the digital age. That's great. I can type way faster than I can write. But when I go back and I read it in my handwriting, it's like, yeah, this is legit. This was me that wrote this. Holy cow. Like, hey, this is unbelievable. I can't believe I felt this way. I'm now 48. I'm going on 49 this October, but I've got a journal from like when I was 18 years old. And it is so awesome to go back and read that. And it's like, wow, I was such a crazy guy. Like, I can't even believe I wrote this, you know. But again, giving my younger self a lot of grace and stating, okay, I didn't know any better. I had the mind of an 18-year-old. I've got 30 more years of experience at this point, but it is just so neat to go back and read those things and understand that, wow, this was a real experience. And it was more real to me then than it was now. But I can go back and think, what would I, if I saw this 18-year-old today sitting on a park bench and he's having these thoughts, what would I do? Would I go over there and be, give him the guilt trip and state, you shouldn't be thinking this, or you shouldn't be doing this, or feeling this way? Or would I put my arm around that kid and say, you know what, it's going to be okay. So I think that we can go back in time, even if it's only a month ago, and be kinder to ourselves, knowing that, wow, I have grown. So huge fan of journaling, huge fan.
Yeah, and there's something about I am also a handwriter when it comes to journaling, because there's something about that motion that allows you to connect to deeper parts of your mind and of yourself that you can't if you're just typing. You access different areas of your mind. And it is such a gift, right? To be able to look back on a journal even from a month ago and be like, wow. And that's why also like reading my book now, it's hard sometimes because it does transport me to that day when I wrote that, you know, and it's connecting to your soul, your heart. When we say words are powerful, it's not just the words you say, it's the words you write. They're reflecting to you something deep about you and what you're experiencing in this moment. That's how I see journaling, really. It's a reflection of your inner world. Even if it's like the silliest things, or you start and you're like, I don't know what to write. That's right. Just keep writing. Put a timer, you know, 10 minutes, rewrite. I find it best in the mornings. So, you know, why before you go to work, before you do anything, your day gets too hectic, maybe have that check-in moment with your heart. How am I feeling? Write about it. Write about how you're feeling.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I think about, there's power in our words, and literally, I think even in the vibrations of how we speak to people, to ourselves, think about how this conversation would be totally different if I had been screaming at you this entire time. It's we probably wouldn't be having much of a conversation. You probably would have hung up this Zoom call like within 2 minutes. Like, I'm not listening to this. But I can totally grasp what you're stating, that by writing, it is more of an interconnection. I really feel like the digital world has, I don't want to say ruined us, but it's changed people in so many ways. Like, there's some good things out there. Like, first of all, I would have had to fly you from Brazil to Tennessee to have this conversation like that. But yet I push a button and there you are. I can see you and I can talk to you. And there's some great things about it. But when I sit here and think about typing, and I don't know, it's I think there's just so much feeling lost. Think about a text message. If I sent you a text message, how much is lost in translation as opposed to me putting inflection in my words? And of course, you being able to see me, and everybody else can't at the moment, but you can see expression on my face, So I can totally see where writing is going to take on a whole different nuance as opposed to just typing up a journal. So
I can geek out on this forever because, you know, I write everything by hand, and it's just this, it's a very sacred creative process as well. And our hands, they're directly connected to our heart. So when I think of that, it's like, you know, you're pouring from your heart through your hands on a piece of paper. Like, what's more intimate than that? That's a sacred ritual that you're having with yourself. And if you can do that every day or, you know, most days, like that alone will change your life.
What are you going to write about today? Have you already written today?
I have written today.
Okay.
I was writing about spring energy and, how I've been feeling just lately in my life. And yeah, just reflecting on that, on just what's blossoming for me right now. I write a lot about just how I feel that day and
Yeah.
let it flow.
So you said the word reflecting, and I'm curious, do you like sunsets or sunrises better?
Sunrises.
Sunrises. Okay. And of course, sounds like you are a morning person.
Yeah.
So in your writings, do you write about looking forward or do you write more reflective? Or is there a good combination of both?
I think it's a little bit of both. Sometimes I just will write myself a love letter, I just will remind myself like, hey, here's all the things that you're actually doing beautiful right now. So that's a little bit of the forward or, for myself. And then sometimes I will kind of dive deeper into, like recently I met one of my shadow aspects through journaling, which was this overworker. And so I had an interesting journaling session just reflecting on this side of me as a shadow because it keeps me from also giving back to myself, right? So there's a lot that can come up when you start writing. It's kind of fascinating.
Yeah, it definitely is. And I like the fact that you said you've written letters to yourself. And that may be a foreign concept for somebody listening out there, but I think it's a fantastic thing. I recently heard someone talk about how somebody from like one of their high school teachers had them write a letter to their future self, like in say 8th or 9th grade. And then this teacher was so kind to mail that to them, like their senior year. And it's like, wow, what a gift that is. But I sit here and think about not only writing a letter to your future self, but I have had clients write breakup letters to themselves. And that may sound odd too, but when I say, okay, Brad, I am tired of living the way I currently am with you, I have to say goodbye to you, and here's why. I have to be a new version of me, Brad 2.0, if you will. And so there are good things that we can do through our writings to ourselves, whether it's, the breakup letter of the old version of you or a future encouragement to someone that may not read this, the 5 year down the road version of you. I think that is also just very special.
I love that idea so much of this breakup letter with certain parts of yourself. I might
Yeah.
just start doing that. And for the letter, I do this ritual at the end of every year where I write my future self a letter and I put it in a sealed envelope and I open it the following New Year's Eve. And that's become my favorite tradition. It made me think of that when you mentioned the teacher's practice.
Yeah, it's like a time capsule, right? It's I don't know.
Yeah.
Not so much what am I doing now, but maybe well wishes for what you will accomplish. And as long as we don't look at those things like, wow, I wish I would have done this during that year that I waited to open up this letter, or assigning fault to ourselves. But I think it absolutely, yeah, that is a great idea. You've inspired me in a lot of ways, and I hope you've inspired our listeners today in a lot of ways, and I'm certain that you have. But AP, I want to give you kind of the final words and anything that you think we've missed on your loss or grief or just anything else you want to share with the listeners.
I just wanted to say that, again, grief is a journey, and I would encourage you to love yourself through this process. Be gentle, be compassionate, take it one day at a time, and yeah, just know that you are loved and that there are many people going through similar or difficult situations as well, and that you are not alone in it.
Excellent. Well, listeners, I appreciate you being here today and listening to AP, and I will have her information in the show description. And again, if you want to be on the podcast like she has been today, just contact me at griefobservedpodcast@gmail.com or on the Facebook page, facebook.com/griefobservedpodcast. Until next time, I wish you well, and we'll see you then. Have a great day, everybody.